All right. Welcome, everyone. Today is March 31st, where we're starting our next session of the Ontology Summit 2011. This is Steve Ray. Today's session is basically a synthesis session where we are going to try and take the first crack at drawing together what we've been hearing in the various tracks leading up to our symposium and communique. And so in that sense, we're going to try and revisit the theme of the summit as originally laid out, which is making the case for ontology. And basically, what we're trying to do is equip ontologists like many of us with the kinds of tools and evidence and anecdotes and strategies to allow any of us to make a very compelling case for moving forward with a project which would involve the use of ontology to solve it. In the support of that, we have had sessions which would bring to light a rich set of use cases where semantic technologies and ontologies in particular have been used in business settings, in actual, not toy applications, but actually situations where there was an expected return on investment. We have had a track which tries to organize the different kinds of applications that have been built into a framework. So we have an application framework track where we can help people find then the kinds of applications that are most useful to them. We have had a track which will try and collect and organize the different kinds of metrics that decision makers might be having in mind as a key driver to whether or not to move forward with a project. It's not just cost. There might be performance, capability, et cetera. And then paired with that, those metrics then would be trying to relate or correlate those metrics with the different kinds of audiences all in this application framework that has been built. And then finally, some suggested strategies for how one could make a case. In other words, in a given context, whether it's a particular domain or a particular kind of audience, try and provide some information that would help an ontologist identify what would be or what has been an effective strategy to make that case. Certainly, we've heard some themes already in the last several months about the fact that you don't want to just push the technology itself. You're not actually explicitly pushing ontology. The most effective cases have been in those situations where the focus has been on the problem that the decision maker is facing, and the fact that ontology is a key technology that can be used to solve that problem is, in the decision maker's mind, probably secondary. But nevertheless, in the context of making a case, that is probably a good rule of thumb to go with, is getting inside the head of your audience, obviously, and speak to what they care about rather than speaking to what we all care about, perhaps. So it's in that context, then, that we're going to have today presentations by various of the track co-champions. We would have ontology application framework first, then in sequence have a quick summary of where we are at this point on the application and case studies that Mike Bennett is going to be presenting. What are some of our best examples to date, and what can we say about them? I believe Todd Schneider, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be presenting the value metrics, the value models, and the value proposition. Then Matthew West is going to be talking about some of the strategies that could be used to make the case. And what I had not mentioned in my little preamble there was the track 5 speaks to some of the grand challenges which essentially represent the opportunity areas for new applications for ontology, ontologies and ontology technologies. And I believe Ram Sriram will be presenting that. And then finally, we're going to hear from Michael Ushold, who will give us a structure of the communique, which is essentially going to be writing all of this down in a fairly succinct way. which we will be presenting at the Summit Symposium on April 19th. The symposium, of course, is April 18th and 19th. We'll be rolling out the communique for sort of public endorsement on the 19th, and that's the Tuesday. So with that, I think we should go ahead and move on. I'm hoping we'll have some time for discussion. Obviously, this is a working call today. We're not just making presentations. What we're doing is essentially seeing where we are with respect to each of those topics and having a discussion. I encourage you all to use the chat board to chime in with your comments, observations, suggestions for how we can tighten things up as we move toward the Summit Symposium, April 18th and 19th. Okay, so why don't I hand it over to you, Michael, and maybe you can synopsize where we are with that.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So I didn't prepare any slides, but Peter has linked my position in the prepared presentation material to the application framework community input page. And this page captures all of the different, synthesizes all the different points that people have made in previous presentations. It effectively provides both the dimensions for categorizing the different applications and gives an initial classification of the ontology applications. One thing, actually, I have not incorporated here yet, has been brought to my attention, is OMB, the Ontology Metadata Vocabulary Project, also has a few ideas to contribute towards this idea of classifying different ontology applications. So I will be updating that to incorporate OMB into our dimensions, so we're a little more aligned with that. So the next steps will be, for one thing, Mike Ushold will take this material and incorporate it into the final document, basically as is. Another aspect that really needs to be done, but I think to some extent, maybe we can do that in the discussion after everyone's presented today, is to tie together the different, both the different dimensions, but also the different classification of ontology applications with the other tracks. And I see Mike, in Mike Bennett's slides, he's done an excellent job of incorporating that. And so I didn't really want to repeat anything that he had said. I think that it actually captures what we want to do with respect to the use cases. So that might just require minor twiddles to Mike Bennett's slides to integrate the framework with the use cases. I had a chance to take a look at Todd's slides to see how the value metrics can be tied into the use cases, but I think that's the only thing that's missing right now. One final point in terms of the future work that would need to be done, and again, this might be a broader discussion after everyone's presented today, would be one of the things that came up in an earlier discussions was who's the intended audience of what we're doing here. And one of the things that I had always envisioned was one of the roles of the framework would be once we're given this initial classification, such as we have on the community input page, to me, different audiences, different, say, business audiences, if we're making the business use case, business case, then they will be focusing in on different kinds of applications that are relevant to their business. So what would excite someone who is looking for, you know, solving their integration problems would primarily be the integration focus. But for people who are looking for groundbreaking applications, disruptive technologies, as Matthew West has said, would not be interested in kinds of applications related to integration. So one of the things you may want to do in future discussions would be to perhaps tailor particular pitches according to the different kinds of applications. So we may end up coming up with what's an application we can do with respect to integration, but that would be very different from what kind of pitch would we present for someone doing knowledge management. So that would be something that we'll want to also look at in the future. But that basically captures it. I think we have had a lot of excellent input and different updates to the community input page, and I haven't received any further comments since the last update as to things that are incorrect or things that are missing, modulo the OMB comment. So I will be adding relevant OMB tags and relations to our framework.
Okay. Let's see. So if people are navigating over to the Ontology Application Framework Wiki, do you have any comments or observations at this time? I think we have a little time for perhaps direct thoughts, either orally on the phone or augmented by the chat board. Any thoughts for Michael Gruninger at this point or the other people on that track, the application framework?
Michael?
Yes.
This is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
And in the creation of our synthesis for the value metrics and value models, there wasn't a strong, well, I guess maybe Rex can say something more about this. He's on the line. There isn't, I guess, a good correlation between the various dimensions in the framework and value models that come out.
Let me take a look at your slide then.
Yeah. Well, we can do
maybe we could. Maybe I can revisit that question after you present your material.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, definitely that's something we need to resolve definitely before the face to face.
Well, not necessarily, but we can discuss that.
Yeah, I mean, we want pointers back and forth, I think. I think we do want cross-referencing there. So, Nicola Guarino, you have your hand up.
Okay, very good.
Go ahead.
Okay, remember last time when we had this talk by Stefano Bertolo, I got the impression that Stefano misunderstood the very name of the track because he thought it was related to tools, a new tool, or anyway, tools for developing ontologies, and he said we are not going to fund these things anymore because we already funded a similar project. So he misunderstood the very title of the track. So I wonder whether maybe we should revise the title of the track a little bit to make it more perspicuous. It is the fact that it is related to ways of comparing different kinds of applications of ontologies. This was my concern.
Yeah. And Michael, I can just jump in. I think what Nicola, what I'm interpreting is saying is he might have thought it was an ontology application development framework as opposed to a, if you like, description or, and I won't use the word classification since that is a loaded term.
Yeah, I would have used the loaded term. Like, would taxonomy of ontology applications be better?
Indeed, this is less ambiguous for sure.
Okay, application. Applications?
It's hard to hear whoever's trying to speak. It's coming through distorted. Saying the words me about taxonomy, it almost implies a one-dimensional classification, whereas we do have multiple dimensions here in the framework that you built.
Okay, ontology use framework from Rex. That sounds okay.
Michael?
Yes.
I guess what Nicole is maybe the way I'm coming at it from what Nicole is saying is the level of granularity that we have in the framework, we all understand very well. And at some point in trying to show or develop a value proposition, you probably want to get down to specifics of you know, what applications you're going to employ these capabilities in. But for an elevator pitch, these sorts of, or this level of granularity, I think, is just overkill, and you can't get it in 30 seconds. Nicole, does that address some of your issues or concerns?
Yes, I'm just thinking, just reading some of the suggestions on the chat. I don't have any special preference. It is important. It is definitely an ambiguous.
Right. Well, Michael, it's not that the framework is wrong, and I think those have value. The question is, at what point do you bring it in?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's definitely true. But it also speaks to the role that it plays, right? So the role that it plays is to provide on the empirical, the ground up side, to provide a kind of a classification of the large number of actual use cases. And on the other hand, to provide almost like classes of pitches, right? So I think that the audiences that resonate with integration are going to be different than the audiences that resonate with knowledge management.
Right. But you only want to get to that level after you've shown them what the problem is and how it could be solved. And then you say, well, okay, because we're working in this area, whether it's semantic augmentation or integration, here's how blah, 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 blah. And
right. No, but that's also the speaks to the audience. So I've always thought this, and maybe Steve thought it in a way too, the audience is actually either other kind of ontolog forum participants who are trying to make a case. And so what we're trying to do is kind of give them enough guidance to say, okay, if you've identified that your potential client, if you will, has a big need for knowledge management, then here are the arguments, the cases that you can bring to bear.
Right.
So it's more like that person is trying to, once they've identified that client, they try to classify them. You're not kind of going to a client and saying, oh, by the way, I see you're a knowledge management guy.
Yeah, right. But see, before you even get to mentioning, say, knowledge management, you have to step up a level and say, well, is the person, the stakeholder, very concerned about their customer relations management? And if they are, then part of that, or if not a large extent, most of it is, has to do with knowledge management on the part of the people responding to the customers. So want to go from the very broad down to the very specific, and at some point, yes, this justification will become important to the people trying to make the case so that they can structure their arguments and the supporting evidence properly.
Mm-hmm. So who would be doing that higher level of abstraction? You think that's part of the framework as well?
No, that's part of not part of the framework, but that's part of the strategy, if you like.
Okay.
And I haven't looked at the strategy stuff, so I can't say, but now that we've had this discussion, I probably need to go back and include that in the synthesis that we'll provide for the communique. So thank you, Nicola, for bringing this up.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, though. As Michael was saying, the framework is, I'm sorry, go ahead. Were you trying to say something, Nicola?
No, I'm fine.
Rex, I was trying to say that the chat has captured a lot of important points.
Yes, indeed. So we need I was sort of agreeing with where Michael was going, I think, in that, yes, the framework is something we would probably never be exposing to our target audience who's making a decision. It is a guide for the ontologist trying to make the case. But I think the points that were raised are still valid. We got to help someone, perhaps from a broader perspective, guide them into the framework rather than just throw them in at the deep end, I guess, is the point that was being made.
Right, okay. So okay. I kind of like ontology usage framework from Rex. That sounds good. Well, there's the word framework. Nicole, it's framework part of the... issues.
Maybe I'm talking about usage guide or something even, although that sounds more travel guide.
Okay, so I'll take this offline with Nicola and Michael so we can move on to other talks.
Okay.
But definitely we will change the name.
All right, in that case, let's move on. Let's hear from Mike Bennett in that case. Tell us how you've, tried to pull things together. We had a broad set of applications or use cases that have been brought to the table, and maybe you can guide us through some ways of absorbing those. So, Mike, why don't you try unmuting? Let's see if we can hear you.
Can you hear me right?
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Okay, so... I'll call out the slide numbers as we go. There's quite a few of them, so I'll try and run through them fairly quickly. So this is the report back on the case study track. So on slide 2, I just reiterated the summit agenda from the wiki just so that we're clear what the case study is trying to support. So I don't really need to go through that, but other than to say we want to be able to classify categories of application and kinds of metrics and strategies, and hopefully the case study thread will feed into that. So slide 3, as we presented at the beginning of this exercise, the goals of this track was to demonstrate what could be achieved with a knowledge-centric approach or an ontology approach that could not be done or could not be done as well by other means. So what was it that people did using one or another kind of ontology, and what kind of business benefits were they able to identify, either in cost savings, risk reduction, or other kinds of things. So looking at the Track 1 ontology usage framework as to what we wanted to select case studies for and what we wanted to show, we wanted to try and cover a broad spectrum of ways in which ontology has been applied, and also a range of what different people mean by that, because very often people have one thing that they work on as an ontology, and that may not be the only thing that that it could mean to somebody else. And also we wanted to try and cover a reasonable range of the different standards and notations and tools that are out there that people are making practical use of in doing that. And then this should all feed, and indeed did all feed, into the Track 1, the about-to-be-renamed ontology application framework. So slide 4. So the approach we took was to canvas a wide range of case studies from different people, and in asking them to present, we also asked them to try and summarize against these four things. So this was before the framework was fully in place. We tried to anticipate some of that by asking the challenge that they set out to address, what solution they used. So what was it that was an ontology? Was it some kind of technical application? Was it a business conceptual model, and so on? We got them to give us a little screenshot or a summary of key features. These are all summarized on the website, the wiki, but not as screenshots, but really as words now. And we tried to get them to describe, and if possible with metrics, with limited success, what metrics they used to demonstrate the benefits of the thing that they were presenting to us. Slide 5. So this is just a little list of the presenters and subjects that we had. Some of these actually had 3 or 4 case studies within them, and I've tried to draw out the details of that in the few slides that follow. So I'm not going to read through this slide, but that's just a handy reference to who presented, where they were from, what the title of their case study talk was. And you see there we had quite a wide range. So slide 6, I've just pasted in the framework from Track 1. There's two aspects of this. There's the dimensions. Now, I'm not going to try and present a 7-dimensional diagram anywhere in these slides, you'll be pleased to know. I've tried to capture some of the main things here. But the dimensions of an ontology were the functionality, architecture, when and by whom is it used, what kind of ontologies were they, and the problem and benefit. And what I'll come back to towards the end of this is the different classification of ways in which ontology is applied, such as integration, decision support, semantic augmentation, and knowledge management. And we can I've tried to work out which of the case studies fit under those four headings or whether we needed other headings, but hopefully that's something to get us going. So slide 7, looking through the case studies that we got, we managed to cover quite a wide range of industry sectors. We've got presentations from the financial services, both in securities and loans and so on. We've got a case study on vehicle rental, very much the customer service side of things, you know, people selecting products. We've got pharmaceuticals, research and development, knowledge management and so on. We've got telecoms application, at least one application in manufacturing, on, you know, configuration of products and stuff, some legal application, and a couple of things around intelligence and security, you know, threat detection, business intelligence, a few hints of things in the security side of things, government agencies, and interestingly, a couple of case studies on technology development itself. So not so much the industry sector, but how ontology is applied within the development process, which is interesting. So slide 8, I've tried to, I've gone through all the case studies and tried to identify what were the different use cases that those folks were trying to address. There was quite a lot around knowledge management, separated from that knowledge extraction, intelligent search and so on. So there's maybe several dimensions to the knowledge management side of things. So there we had business intelligence, things like getting stuff out of structured and unstructured data, you've got threat detection, also some quite significant research and development, bringing different research bodies of knowledge together. Then on the business and industrial side, we had a manufacturing case study. We had a customer, that's the rental thing, allowing customers to select and refine products and services, and also a fairly intensive application for customer relationship management center application. And then, as I said, we had use cases in technology development itself, actually applying semantic notation to concepts in the development process, such as service-oriented architecture and business processes and so on. And also I've put under there things like data integration as a an application for, in particular, common vocabularies and common ontologies within businesses and within an industry and so on. So those are the range of use cases that I feel we were able to capture in terms of what was the problems people were trying to solve using ontologies. Slide 9. We also had quite a wide range of different answers to what was it that people meant by an ontology, what was the thing they used. Of course, the popular one was OWL, the web ontology language. We also had one case study that seemed to be more UML, but with some semantic usage in that on the development side. We've got a couple of uses of the ontology definition metamodel. This is an OMG metamodel that allows you to define OWL constructs, but using UML tooling. Then we also had a semantic media wiki in one of them. A couple of places we had Sparkle, that's a querying language that is normally used with OWL ontologies to allow people to query the content of a knowledge base or an ontology. A couple of applications using natural language processing for knowledge extraction and so on. And as far as I could tell, one or two of the case studies, it was hard to tell exactly what was under the hood, but appeared to be some kind of triple store, whether it was RDF or some proprietary format is hard to tell. We also had systems that used rules for extraction of knowledge from unstructured material, so rules working alongside some kind of formal triple store. And another thing worth mentioning, because this has come up in a couple of places, is vocabularies. We had folks using vocabulary alongside ontology or trying to relate different sets of vocabularies in the business area to one ontology, and also managing vocabularies themselves. So that was the range of things which really came under the general heading of ontology. Slide 10. also mentioned in the framework was what are the different methods of presentation. So I went back through and looked at how was the content of an ontology presented to users, to business subject matter experts, to developers, and so on. So there's the classical OWL tools. I don't know if anybody actually used Protégé. We've got Topgrade Composer, which has a more graphical presentation of OWL. We had a couple of uses of UML tools to present OWL concepts using the ontology definition metamodel. We had a wiki application, as I mentioned, using Semantic Media Wiki. Also, some of the applications using OWL and some of the OWL tools also generated or used Visio type of diagrams to present information to business experts or users. We had a few with their own custom interfaces. We had some nice screenshots of what people showed people. Some of those were more like, on-screen forms and so on. And finally, a fairly important one is taking the content of ontologies and presenting in natural language or using natural language in some way. Slide 11. So I thought I'd throw this one in myself. This is, I'm not sure it's really in the framework at the moment, but something I think is quite important because people see it differently is what is the relationship between the model and what's modeled? So one important one that I'm very involved with is business conceptual models. In other words, what's modeled in ontology is not the data in some application, but the actual real-world things that the business is interested in. And we saw that in industry standardization efforts and in a number of other applications for knowledge-based management as well. Some of the knowledge-based stuff was more like logical data structures, customer data, and things like actionable business data, but much more in a logical data structure. Also, interestingly, we had models of technical development constructs, such as service-oriented architecture, process notation, and so on, all represented in an ontology to help with systems development. Also, in some cases, what was modeled was really the words people used rather than necessarily the underlying meaning. So, again, there's that vocabulary or terminology side. And a couple of applications also had business rules alongside or along with ontology content. We had business rules being modeled as well. So slide 12 on metrics, looking at the metrics track 3 stuff, there was stated benefits such as customer retention, competitive advantages, and so on. Actually, what I've done here is pulled out what were the benefits people said that they got and tried to summarize into a few small categories. So there was customer retention, particularly the call center thing, not losing or upsetting customers. They had competitive advantage, so you had like the rental thing where you could actually give your customers a wider range of choice more quickly and without relying on them using search words to not find something. And along with that, things like time to market, both with that and with the manufacturing case study, where being able to select complex combinations of things for some production runs make much quicker time to market for trucks, I believe. Threat detection is a benefit in its own right, of course, particularly on the security side of things. And I think the big one with corporate knowledge, so the whole benefit of having a knowledge the knowledge base that people could use and access, and in particular in the research and development of the pharmaceuticals, you had a wide range of different bodies of research using different words and different concepts, and by linking those together into one ontology, the organization itself felt that it had a better handle on its knowledge. Didn't get much in the way of numbers. The call center example said a 15% improvement in some metric that I've never heard of. So they were obviously 50% happy with whatever that is. I believe it relates to retention of customers or solving their problems. And a number of, I think Mills had some new thing on this, but I couldn't find it, some what it took to develop something before they tried to use ontology and what it took to develop after in terms of being able to compare several years of failed effort to several months of successful effort. Slide 13. Oh, yes. So, therefore, then I pulled down the track 3 value thing to see whether, and again, the metrics we described weren't necessarily directly aligned with these, so I hope I've understood these correctly. Customer satisfaction, I believe we've got a case study to show that. Actionable business intelligence, we've got several case studies that show that. Service orientation, if they meant service-oriented architecture, then yes, we've got a case study that shows that, quite an interesting one. Otherwise, I'm not quite sure what that metric meant. Complex business events and workflows, yes, that was a recurring thing in many of the case studies. Collaborative operations, both R&D, in manufacturing and so on, people working together to a common knowledge base was a very common theme across the case studies. Interoperable business services, in as much as that means anything different from collaborative operations, I'd say a big benefit shown there is when you have common ontologies across business units, for example, industry standardization efforts, which allow for common messaging in, say, financial industry clearing and settlement and all that kind of thing. So I'd say yes to that as well. How many of those we can put numbers to, I'll leave that for track three, but hopefully that's kind of taken care of some of that. Slide 14, just picked a couple of common themes. I'm sort of running out of time, so I won't spend long on this, but I just wanted to pull out, independently of the different frameworks, what were the themes that I felt were emerging from these case studies. I think the main one, extracting information from both structured and unstructured data to create a more formal knowledge base using an ontology, so that's an ontology of both the concept and the content, if you like, the individuals. Another theme is managing combinational complexity in manufacturing, in services you offer to customers, and so on. So again, the truck thing, the rental thing. Reuse of terms is an interesting theme. Some of the applications had common upper ontology material that they were able to reuse in new industries and thereby minimize the time in which the ontology itself could be created compared to doing it from scratch. Interesting theme, as I mentioned, was a couple of folks using ontology itself within the development process to essentially sharpen up the way the process itself is managed. Corporate knowledge, of course, very much a recurring theme. And I just sort of pull out, again, the whole conversation about terminology versus ontology. Some ontology folks put an owl class, for example, against every word. Others only do that for the concept and then have synonyms for different words, but then don't deal with the flip side of synonyms, which is the heteronyms that you would define in a terminology resource. So there's some interesting stuff to explore on how those two relate, which we can come on to. Slide 15, looking at the classifications in the track one framework, integration, decision support, semantic augmentation, and knowledge management. So I've outlined under each of these what were the different case studies that fit under those different classifications. So I think we've kind of covered the range of classifications that were identified in track one. Slide 16. So did we capture the information that's useful to support the summit theme of making the case for ontology? Well, we've made a case for those four kinds of application as per the usage framework. And in terms of what audience, I'd say you can break out a number of audiences for those four kinds of application based on what the case studies were that we had. You have stuff that's useful for technology management, both the integration of data and in the development lifecycle stuff. Customer relationship, so who's responsible for retaining or dealing with customers, there was one strong case study on that. Likewise, for whoever's in the management of manufacturing, research and development and so on, business owners and so on. And then also you've got things like government agencies, regulators, security services are also a key audience for some of the things that we've shown can be done with ontology. So that's our case study. Sorry it took longer than I hoped, but hopefully that's been useful.
Yes, thank you. And in fact, Matthew just corrected me. I was sending a message in your direction on the chat, and you know, the British accent, I just sort of like equate the two of you, Mike and Matthew. But that's my mistake. I did want to make a comment, however, that I'm hoping that we're going to be able to have as many concrete links to essentially documentation on those as many concrete cases as possible. In other words, I think you've done an excellent job of harvesting out of those cases both the assessment of what it is they were trying to do, whether it was, you know, semantic augmentation or search or bringing some structure to unstructured data. But what's your thought on that? Are we going to be able to point people from within the community to those cases?
There's too much to do in the flyer, but if you look at the wiki page, I think I put it on the internally managed version of the repeat.2 wiki pages for the track, and I've probably got the wrong one. But that has a list of the case studies with, like, just the four basic questions we asked them individually. What I could do, now that we've pulled out these common threads in these slides, is link these back to the individual case studies that we think show those particular things. That would, I think, be a job for the wiki. It would be too multidimensional to put on a slideshow.
Yeah, and I think actually, and I bet you John's going to be on this theme too in just a minute, that giving as many people access to the actual use cases themselves, I think, is a tremendous value coming out of this whole thing. So I think that's going to be really helpful. John, Soa, you want to unmute yourself and weigh in on this?
Okay.
Can't hear you.
Oh, here you go. I wanted to raise is a question that's related to some of the recent things I submitted to the Ontolog Forum about Fact Guru, and that it seems that an awful lot of the examples and the discussion of the advantages of ontologies are really down to the issue of what benefit you get from having a common terminology across all the departments, because it's really the humans that are being made interoperable, so that when they use these words, they're using them in a consistent way, and then after the people get feel comfortable with all those that terminology, then eventually what they do is get the computers to do things. But the question is, how much of these advantages really were the result of the human agreement, and how much was it the result of actual software implementation based on formal ontology tools?
Right. I think there are a couple of different kinds of use cases. I think what we did find with a couple of them, the Sallie Mae, our own EDM Council stuff and so on, is actually it wasn't so much people getting a benefit out of terminology, the common terminology. It was quite the opposite, that where different business units or departments or companies have different terminology for the same things, we had a couple of strong case studies that showed that having a common ontology allowed you to decouple the meanings from the words, so that whereas people will argue forever about the meaning of a word, you can get them to agree on the concepts that exist. And actually, ontology has a clear benefit over terminology in solving that. But I think going back to the conversations on the Ontolog Forum, I had this kind of aha moment last week at the ONG when somebody was asked about heteronyms, when I was trying to figure why we don't do heteronyms in our ontology. We only do synonyms. And it's because our instructions from the industry in the EDM Council work were, you know, we want one entry per meaning with one definition and then X number of synonyms. And people didn't really care about words. As long as, and we saw this with the Sallie Mae thing, that you had different business units with different vocabularies, that being able to link a multiple set of vocabularies to a single or a smaller set of ontologies was itself the business benefit that those folks saw. And that's all independent from, as you say, the other kinds of application, which was the ontology being what drove an actual technical solution, which was another kind of use case we had in the trucks and the customer relationship management and the car rental and so on.
Okay, but still you're talking about the definition stated in ordinary language. In other words, that you have different departments use different words for the same basic thing, but it's irrelevant whether that definition is stated in OWL or whether it's stated in an English definition that just says, here's this phrase that's used in the sales department and here's this phrase that's used in engineering. They both happen to have different terms, but they actually resolve to exactly the same definition. Now, that is still a terminology issue. It's not an ontology issue.
That's a very good point, and I think one worth bringing out, because I hadn't really focused on that. But, yes, having common definitions is much more important to business users than what label each of them might apply to that definition. So, in a sense, and I think we saw this in a couple of, you know, with the different knowledge bases, the R&D one, as well as our financial work, that you could just create a spreadsheet of, you know, definitions, but how would you know that each one referred to one unique meaning? So the ontology kind of backs that up and helps disambiguate it so that, you know, some folks look at the definition and don't care about any of the logical facts around it, but others can look at it and say, well, okay, so this has enough information in the ontology to back up the formal written meaning in the definition. But absolutely, the business folks really care about formal written definitions.
The point I was making is that Fact Guru can handle that. There's no reason why you can't have a set of terms that are commonly used in the sales department, a set of terms that are commonly used in manufacturing, another in engineering, and another in shipping. Those terms could all resolve to the same set of definitions, which are given also in, Stuth uses the term clear talk for a version of controlled English, and then that clear talk statement could then be systematically written in OWL or Common Logic or Scikit-L or whatever else, but all of the fundamental benefits of it are obtained at the language level, natural language level, rather than actually at the formal level of whatever computable version you're using.
Yes and no. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to be done on the interface between terminology and ontologies. So, for instance, in the OMG, you've got the SDBR standard, which is very terminology-based, and you've got the OWL ODM work, which is ontology-based, and getting the nice kind of agreement between those. I would say for some of the case studies, the definitions were all that mattered. For others, where you had integration among systems and among organizations through common messaging and so on, being able to take that single set of meanings, each meaning having one definition, and then be able to relate that to multiple technical applications, that's where I think the ontology comes into its own, over and above just having a set of written definitions. So I think the two together, a framework that ties together terminology and ontology, I think what we've seen in the case studies, there's a number of places where that sort of thing would...
Yes, I totally agree with that. So, I've been emphasizing logic and ontology for years, so I am very happy to see that kind of a point, but I would like to make it clear, what is the benefit obtained by the language that is by resolving the language issues among the people? What is the benefit of the actual computational work? Now, I'm happy to hear that you're talking about SBVR versus OWL, because SBVR is far and away more expressive than OWL is. And in order to relate SBVR and OWL, you cannot use OWL. You have to use Common Logic or even the IKL extensions. You have to use a very expressive logic in order to resolve those computational issues so that...
Yeah.
We have to make sure that we're clear about all of these issues, and not just. And I think one of the advantages, I think, just in the past week, of discussions about the Fact Guru thing has helped to clarify a lot of these issues. And where is it that we are getting the benefit from the language understanding among the people and the computational interchange among the computers?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to close this off just right now on today's session, although it's fascinating. I think this is a really important point, but we've got a lot of track to get through. So thanks, John, for bringing up that point. I think that's really interesting. Can we move on to track three then on the value metrics, value models, and value proposition? And Todd, I guess you're going to be presenting that. Is that right?
Okay, so if you go on to slide two, please. Make the screen redraw. Okay, so I'm still going to start out with I think the first slide that Rex presented at our value metrics models discussion back in February. And these are some of the items we were trying to address and how we might go about addressing them. And, of course, at the end of the value proposition, what's the benefit? Now, I have to point out or at least recognize that most of the discussions that we had and presentations that we had at that meeting in February, for the most part, missed the mark, and I'll qualify that by saying, or I'll show you what the mark was that they missed later on. So if we go on to slide three, please. So this is supposed to be synthesis of all the work that's been done by the various tracks, and I really have to congratulate Mike Bennett and Nils for really synthesizing all of the case studies that were presented in a very nice, digestible format. It made the task for Rex and I for this particular session and for the communique a lot easier. So So the rest of the slides are going to be based on the synthesis of those case studies. And what you see on slide 3 is a derivation of looking at that material and coming up with these value models as represented by the case studies. So in particular, looking at them, we saw that there seemed to be just about 5 value models that were shown. One was business efficiency. Another was business agility, operational efficiency, customer satisfaction, and IT efficiency. Now, there is some, at least in my mind, and I have a definition of it in the slides, but you don't have it near the PowerPoint chart, of the difference between the business efficiency, operational efficiency, and IT efficiency. And I think there are subsets. In particular, IT is a subset of IT efficiency is a subset of operational efficiency, and that's a subset of business efficiency. So certainly IT and its capabilities support operations in a business. But in a business, there are multiple types of operations which could be segregated by departments, whether it's sales, customer interaction, human resources, research and development, payroll, facilities, and so on. They have their own operations, which contribute to the overall business. And you can think of the business, at least in this case of the value model and business efficiency, as those activities or operations that cut across multiple departments. So in particular, collaborative operations. And as pointed out, if you have common terminology, you can support easier operations across the various departments at those points where they do interact and they have to cross their boundaries. So, again, these value models that you see here on this slide were derived strictly from the synthesis of the case studies. So under business efficiency, we have collaborative operations crossing across various sub-operations or subgroups of operations. The business agility, the ability to produce new products very quickly or make use of information as business intelligence. Something that you can act on, either to create a new product, to scale back a product, to change your whole direction, or whatever. And, of course, depending on the market that you're in, this may have to be done very quickly, or it could take a couple of months or a couple of years. Next one is operational efficiency. And now this gets down to, like, specific operations, whatever it might be. If it's particular things like search and discovery. So, for instance, if you're in a large corporation, most have intranets. And they all have some sort of search capability. And depending on the size of the corporation, you can waste a lot of time trying to find something. So you can improve operational efficiency in that regard in this one little area. Or if you are trying to produce responses to whatever, whomever your customers are or your other peers, you may be able to do it more quickly and precisely. Under customer satisfaction, you might be able to reduce your customer relation management costs, as we demonstrated in some of the, at least one of the case studies that was presented to us. And now, again, customer satisfaction is both internal and external, because, again, if you have a large corporation, you could have internal customers to another department in the same department, however you want to partition those things, or you could have customer satisfaction to external departments. So particularly if you like IT has internal customers. They may also have external customers, so they are concerned about their internal customer satisfaction. And then we have IT efficiency. You know, are those applications, your service-oriented architecture, are your simple network management capabilities being made more efficient? Can you provide support for agile and complex workflows? So these things we listed here, are derived from the case study. So if we go on to slide 4, please. So for each of those value models, we need to have some metrics. And again, but what we can't do is come up with common metrics across all of those categories, because if the goal of the Ontology Summit is to be able to help people make the case as opposed to making explicit cases, then what we have to do, and I don't see any other recourse, is to provide some guidance as to how you go about making the case. So when you look at these value metrics, they may seem rather glib. However, based on what I just said, I think the only way or the only thing that Rex and I can provide is a way to look at a problem and give direction as to how you might go in order to provide the best possible case to your stakeholder. And again, the stakeholders are the people that have to make the decisions to spend the money. Subsequently, they may not be interested, initially at least, at whether you're doing a service-oriented architecture, whether you're doing automated decision support or whatever. They have particular problems that they want to solve with respect to the business. Then you have to get down to, well, what are those pieces of the business that are going to be impacted or which will gain value by doing this? And then once you identify the piece of the business that's going to impact it and or provide additional value, then you have to go back and then talk about, well, how each of those pieces in the business, that sub-business case, is going to be impacted and so on. So if you like, this is a model of late binding, or don't give the details until you absolutely have to, moving from the general to the very specific. So based on those value models, the metrics that you would need to demonstrate or give validity to your argument in the case of business efficiency is what operations are going to cut across the various departments or subgroups in your business that will be impacted or gain an advantage by using these capabilities. You know, and for those particular cross-cutting operations, what's going to be changed in them? Are you going to save time? Or are you going to improve performance or something else? So once you've identified the cross-cutting operations, you can then start asking the specifics of those cross-cutting operations, whatever they may be. And again, we're not going to try and enumerate them. What is it that's going to get improved? Under business agility, what is it you're going to change to improve agility? Are you going to provide more or quicker responses to questions or better understanding of the current environment, of being able to use current business information to make projections into the future in terms of market share and so on, or where markets are going if you're in that sort of area? Under operational efficiency, again, we're talking about specific types of operations, whether it's inventory tracking, whether it's supplier logistics tracking. Which of those specific operations are going to be impacted? And if they're going to be impacted, then what is going to be the benefit? Are you going to save time? Are you going to reduce the overall workflow? Are you going to end up improving products as a result of doing these things? So those are some of the metrics that you can look at once you've identified which things are going to be impacted. And similarly, customer satisfaction. Well, this one I'm working on, as you can see, because I have it stated as a negative. If you're going to introduce these capabilities, or if you should say, back up a step, if your stakeholder is concerned about customer satisfaction, what is it you can do to reduce customer frustration? Now, you could think of that as a complement of customer satisfaction, but that may not be exactly the case. IT efficiency. Okay, that might be a little easier to make the case for in terms of simple-minded metrics. In fact, many of the items that we talked about during our Track 3 conference call were closer to IT efficiency than any other value models. But in IT efficiency, you can ask explicitly, you know, what service is going to be made more effective? Is your network management going to work better? Is your email service going to be improved? Is your QoS among the various services in your architecture going to be improved? And then you can then couple that to specific business operations, and that would be a much better case to make than just worrying about particular services in the service-oriented architecture, parts of your network, or whatever. So if we move on to slide 5, so the synthesis process, which I've already explained, is, again, based on the synthesis of the case studies that Mike Bennett and Mills Davis provided for us. The framework category that Mike provided for us. And then in each of the use cases that were synthesized, there were success metrics. We looked at those, and then from that we identified the particular value model. So what it looks like is we have a case study name, the category, the problem description solution, solution success metrics, and then our synthesis. So if we go on to slide 6, there's just a couple of the samples here so you can see how we did things. So we looked at the customer relation management for telecom. The category seems to be semantic augmentation for this particular case study again. The success metrics, again, I've highlighted those particular items that seem to be metrics. That is minimizing or eliminating the agent diagnosis time, where the agent is the human, I assume. Providing consistent and efficient call handling. That's certainly a very quantifiable and measurable item. Increasing customer satisfaction. Well, that gets a little fuzzier. But then the synthesis of this is that the value model is operational efficiency, because you're looking at these particular operations of, say, agent diagnosis, and then customer satisfaction. Well, maybe efficient call handling, reducing the time the customer has to be on the line, and or consistent answers to customers' questions. That can be very heartening if you've ever called one of these systems and had to get different answers at different times. That can be a little more troublesome to measure, but again, if you get very specific to a particular business and a particular situation in that business, you can probably come up with some quantifiable. My friend just slipped the gear. Moving on. So the metrics are, if you like, the reduced agent response times, reduced customer interaction times, they're staying on the line less longer, response consistency. So if we move on to slide 7, please. We have a very nice example about this mass customization of vehicles, and that certainly clearly was a decision support situation. They identified the success metrics in that problem space to be quick and reliable specifications of these variations. They were able to implement changes very quickly, so that's certainly an operational and also an IT efficiency situation. So the synthesis to the value model, it gave them business agility. They could deal with these changes very quickly and support more customers and more products. They had operational efficiency based on the flexibility of that system to make adapt to changes. Subsequently, the metrics, as just clearly identified here, were reduced response time, response reliability, consistency there again, and the time to implement changes was clearly reduced. So for our communique, we're going to extend this, and we have to then probably integrate it better with the various parts of the application framework. So I'm open to questions if there's time, which I don't think there is. Steve?
Well, there's time for a little bit, I think, although no one's raised their hand at this point. Does anyone have a quick question to raise? I think you did an excellent job in pulling this together, I think. I'm really happy to see how this ultimately points back to some very concrete examples. So I congratulate you, in fact, Todd, for drawing upon the other tracks here and helping to connect the dots in a lot of cases. Okay, Michael Grunninger. Yes, Michael, chime in.
Hey, Todd.
Michael, yeah.
Todd, so you had a question for me before, and I said I'd answer it after this your slides, but I forgot what your question was.
I don't remember myself, but I think it had to do with moving from the general to the specific. So if you want to do a 30-second elevator speech to get a person's attention, you probably don't want to mention things about whether you're doing integration or semantic augmentation and so on. However, once you get that person's attention for more than 30 seconds and you have identified what their problem space is, whether it's manufacturing and logistics control, then you want to break that down. Well, because it's logistics control, I have a supply chain to deal with, and in that supply chain, I have to integrate different vendors, and I also may have to have some decision support in there. So, once you get down to that level, I think the application framework will help in terms of figuring out the point that you want to make.
Okay. Because after kind of some of these other discussions, particularly after Mike Bennett's presentation, I kind of was thinking that, really what the framework is doing, it's almost like providing in the chat I used this idea of
the guide,
ontology use case metadata, that effectively what it's doing is kind of providing the guidance for how people should be describing their use cases, so that then other people can take that and make the business case, from the different sets of use cases. And so I see your value metrics as kind of being part of the description of the use case. So that would help call in as one of the other dimensions.
If the goal is to provide help in trying to make the case, then I don't care about use cases. I have, unless those use cases act as a template, right? Here's this use case. It's pretty close to what I need to do. Here's how these people did it. I could follow that. Is that what you had in mind?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So I guess what we're maybe discussing here is the level of detail of that template. Because at a certain level, the framework was intending to be the language that we use to describe that template. So what information should be provided there in order for people to describe the use case adequately so that other people can then reuse that use case for another kind of argument. So I guess what we're discussing here is what's the granularity?
Well, it has to be multiple granularities. Again, you know, if you're searching for something, you need to narrow it down first and then keep narrowing it down further.
Okay,
let's move on then because we've got three more presentations to go and we're starting to get short on time. So, Todd, were you going to say anything else last minute? Maybe just that you were muting. Okay. Track four, strategies for making the case. Let's now step back and say, how can you use all this? And Matthew, if you're unmuted, you can take it away. Matthew West. Not hearing you yet, Matthew.
Yes, I'm here now. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're looking in this at various strategies for making the case. And this is... Peter Ian and myself have been trying to pull things together on this track. So next slide, slide two, please. I wanted to start by noting what we're not doing. There are two things that we might have chosen to do, and we might have chosen to do both of them for that matter. We might have chosen to take a visionary approach to making the case for ontology. You know, the sort of the JFK approach of we choose to go to the moon, we do these things not because they're easy, but because they're hard, that sort of stuff. Looking at research goals, and why they would be good things to go for that could perhaps be put together in grand challenges. You know, we're very much at the bean counter end of thing versus the Steve Jobs end of thing, and we pretty much decided that the audience is ourselves rather than other people, the people that as a community we need to influence perhaps. We've gone for the pragmatic. We're looking at, we need to put food on the table. How do we actually turn ontology into that kind of opportunity? I think that probably we ought to come back to the visionary at some point, but at the moment I think that's just something that should be passed. Okay, next slide please, slide three. I think this is one of Chris Partridge's slides, isn't it? Yes. One of the things that has come through, I think, nearly everywhere, is that there is no commercial case for ontology to which one needs to add on its own. Ontology is not an end in itself. It's a tool, you need to make the case for using it to solve some problem. And there is a challenge there in that it's unlikely that you will be able to point to a pile of money and say, that's because we use the ontology. It is likely you'll be able to point to a pile of money that says that we did all this stuff in which ontology was a critical component, and with all this other stuff, we were able to make this pile of money. Generally speaking, not just for the ontology itself. And generality doesn't help you. It's not a lot of use having something that can do nearly anything. People don't want to be able to do anything. They want to be able to do something specific. They will have a specific problem, not a general one, always. Next slide, please, slide four. Well, why bother with ontology? In the end, it's about increasing the effectiveness, reducing the cost, being responsive to change, That all comes really from decisions and the way that information supports those. And it's looking at reducing the risk of those decisions, that they're bad ones, and improving the chances that they're good ones. And it's actually the information that is supported by ontologies that make those decisions. And of course, a lot of that might be automated. So you may have reached the stage where the ontologies are supporting the information and the decisions themselves are automated. And this happens in various control systems that work better or worse. Next slide. But it's always that kind of a thing that gives you the benefits. And that helps. Now, there are two types of business case. Incremental, doing the same thing better, and data integration is an example of something like that, and disruptive, enabling something new. And we had to talk about Siri, which is doing that sort of thing. And again, you know, ontology itself is not the objective, but what you are doing with ontology is. And bearing that in mind will make it much easier. And in fact, just recognizing the futility of trying to justify ontology on its own is also a useful thing. Just something, just a brick wall you don't have to bash your head against. Next slide, slide six. Some strategic areas. This comes from our European colleagues. Follow the data trails. There's a volume trail, there's a value trail, and there's an integration trail. Volume trail is where is there large volumes of data, and that needs semantics so that you can make better use of it. Where's the value trail? What is the information that has high value, and how can you use ontologies to leverage that? In the integration trail, where does data need to go to? Where is it going to be used? How do you match the sources and sinks of information? How do you translate between the users and consumers as needed? Okay, slide seven. One of the things here is, if you recall the previous particularly coloured slide, that was talking about how information supports decisions. And this is about information quality and how different aspects around ontology support some of the properties of information that determine its quality. So you see there's a lot around consistency. So things like enterprise data models, reference data, physical data models, integration architectures. You have provenance in which is supported by your interface operations, which and you have timeliness and completeness, which is about data quality standards. That's something that people haven't mentioned, but one of the simple things you can do with ontologies is actually check the quality of the data. The stuff in the pay box, isn't it? The data, and again, automated processes can help with the timeliness, and that can be quite a breaker because if you're able to make information available where before it wasn't possible to make it available in a timely way, that can be a game changer. So that's some of the things that can be disruptive. And then, of course, we were talking about, there was a lot of chat about terminologies and that sort of thing. And an enterprise data model is an example of that. And here you're looking at the clarity. So some different names for a few things, but I'm sure you get the picture. Next slide, slide eight. So here's a particular case where you see things happening. Master data management, an area where ontologies play a key role, both in the quality of the data and master data management to at least a certain extent is an enterprise's ontology, the ontology of the enterprise itself. This is a particularly potent area for most enterprises. Next slide, slide 9. Sorry, I'm having problems with the right here, the value of ontology. Here you see how necessary MDM is to every organization, but not something that is easy to achieve. But it's an easy way to move ontologies into the mainstream. If you go and talk to most large organizations, they will have a master data management operation or program going. And they know that this is about getting their organization to use some sort of common terminology and getting that deployed across the different systems that they have. Ontology tools and methods are very closely mirrored MDM tools and methods, as I said. It's just another name for the same stuff. Yes, there's in fact there's really only one slide left, which was about the different roles. Can we get that slide up?
That was slide number 10, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And this is really just noting that there are a number of different people that we may need to make the case to, and because they have a different perspective on a particular problem, then they're going to need a different kind of approach. So if you're looking at technology decision makers, they'll be looking at things like variety management. If you're looking at strategic decision makers, they're looking at the bottom line. If you're looking at technology implementers, they're looking at ease of use. So, and educators are looking for whether there's going to be a market for actually educating people. So there's a range of people and a range of roles that we need to be making probably quite different cases to. And that's really it. It's just another quote on slide 11.
Okay, thank you for that. And again, I feel bad cutting people off in discussions and things, but I do want to finish to get through.
I think the discussion is best done on the chat, to be honest.
Yes, there is, and there's some great points being made on the chat, actually. So please keep checking on that. Why don't we quickly go on to the Grand Challenges track and invite Ram to say a little bit about the opportunities that have been articulated as far as the future grand challenges. Ram, are you on?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay, this is going to be short anyway. Can I have the next slide? So this slide shows the goals for the grand challenge task, the track that we put forward. And the idea is for, we have several domains that were presented. And for kind of each domain, we wanted to summarize the state of the art on ontology use, both in academia and industry, determine the gaps that hinder real-world ontology application, and enumerate the actions that need to be taken to overcome these gaps. Now, this is what we told the panelists to talk about, but as you know, what happened in the previous panels too, is that different panelists kind of treated this differently, okay? So I try to kind of synthesize, we try to synthesize their views. And then once we do that, then we want to brainstorm some ideas for a grand challenge problem. So that was what was put for them, to them. And next slide. We had, I believe, one, two, three, about six speakers there. Chris Welty from IBM, who talked about the grand challenges for Watson-like systems. And Elliot Siegel kind of continued that Watson line of thinking, but in terms of applications to the medical world. Chris Chu talked about the, again in the medical world, but relationships between biomedical ontologies and classifications. Ramesh Jain talked something about social life networks. Nabil Adam talked about ontologies in human security, and finally the XPRIZE, which Chris Frangione gave a presentation on what that is and how we can do an XPRIZE for ontologies. Next slide. So there were three particular domains that were identified: healthcare, social security, and homeland security. Among these six speakers, I guess one speaker just talked about the XPRIZE, but anyway. So these are the domains that were identified for grand challenges. Next slide. And in terms of the healthcare world, Chris Welty didn't have slides, but then he talked about Watson in general. It's not very clear to me that Watson actually uses ontologies, because what I gathered from the conversations is that it uses some kind of a statistical technique to somehow gather this or summarize this information or to answer these questions. But apparently it's using natural language processing. And I didn't get much out of in terms of the actual architecture of this Watson from whatever they talked, except for the fact that it did do something useful in Jeopardy. But the key thing around here is what's pointed out in terms of the extending Watson-like systems. Watson seems to be a pretty neat system. But anyway, I think one thing I got from them is that the Watson-like systems need to be augmented with ontologies. Okay? So that's the lesson that I learned there. And applications that people are talking about in terms of the grand challenges is this text retrieval. For example, you have medical texts like Internal Medicine, Internal Principles of Internal Medicine by Harrison, and the Merck Journal of Medicine, and those kinds of things. So the idea is, if you have a particular question, for example, or you can present a case of a particular patient going to a doctor and having certain symptoms, and the symptoms can be not routine symptoms, the system should be able to go and pick up the appropriate, should be able to answer these questions by referring to any of these texts. As you know, Watson apparently had some 200 million pages of text or something like that, to the effect of 4 terabytes or something like that. So you can, one can imagine all these medical texts encoded in some format. And then the challenge here is you pose a medical query, and the system will go and retrieve the answer in an appropriate manner, just like it did in Jeopardy. But however, this problem is a little more complicated because it requires a lot of prior knowledge. And that's why medical people take 4+4 years to graduate, because you need a lot of background knowledge, not only on just internal medicine, but also the pathological basis of the disease, the biochemistry, and all kinds of things as such. And these things, appropriate abstractions have to be encoded in there. The second challenge here is automated chart reviews. For those of you who have read the ONC PCAST report, one of the applications they pointed out there is that what's going to happen in 2014 is that all medical doctors are supposed to be using this electronic health record. So if they use electronic health records, then they have to document all the clinical aspects of the patient's visit in this electronic medical record. So a system then should be able to kind of do some machine learning kind of activities on this EHR. And not only that if someone were to review this chart, the system should be able to automatically review a particular doctor's chart for whatever purpose you want to do. And the third application, which was pointed out, are this notion of using these systems for diagnosis and treatments, and that kind of goes by, I think Siegel talked about mycelin-like expert systems, but those expert systems kind of did not fail gracefully, and they were very brittle as such. And what he was envisioning as something like the Watson-like system augmented with express system-like reasoning, except that the system kind of fails in a graceful manner and is not brittle. People have tried to do that, but have not succeeded very well as such. So the key challenge, the first three items talk about the problem challenge. So in each one of the slides, we have the problem challenge, and then we have the challenge for ontologies. And here, Chris Chute kind of talked about the ICD-11 and beyond. And the problem there is the creation, validation, verification of ontologies. That is the fundamental issue with respect to addressing the problem challenge. So there's a problem challenge, and there's an ontology challenge. Next slide, please. Ramesh Jain talked about social networking, starting with the Internet of Things. So what essentially he did was that merged two concepts, the social networking concept and the Internet of Things concept, and he came up with something called social life networks. And two of the things that he pointed out which are important in the social life networks, I'm not sure that everyone knows what this Internet of Things is all about, but the idea is to have these objects which are connected over the internet, and the objects have certain functionality, and they talk to one another across the internet. And social networking, I guess we all know as human beings talking on this network. And now, if the humans and the objects are the silicon and the carbon interface now is strong, and both of them talk on this network, then it becomes a social life network. And he gave some examples of this photo taking and some situational analysis examples. So then slides 8 and 9 of Ramesh Jain, you can see the challenges that he posed for situational analysis and interpreting images and text, which is anyway, by the way, context-based, because depending on where you are and what you are doing, this needs to be appropriate actions need to be taken. In other words, you are walking down the road and you take a photograph of something happening on the street, and that particular photograph now is relayed to the internet, and there may be a similar action which has happened somewhere in Japan or something like that, and your system somehow or other kind of figures out that something else is going to happen in the future, like a tsunami coming in and so on. Okay, so this kind of things are pretty dynamic, intelligent, and all, and you can imagine. And it's kind of what I would like to say is you can imagine what can happen in the future on these kinds of things. And what was pointed out is to make such a vision happen, you need to create something called R ontologies, which are recognition ontologies. Again, I don't want to go into details of what these recognition ontologies are, but there are some abstractions where events can be mapped. And there are several kinds of these ontologies, event ontologies, which are maybe process ontologies, and there are situational ontologies. There are ontologies which tell the physical ontologies, map ontologies, GIS ontologies, and things like that. But anyway, so you have to create a lot of these ontologies to make such the vision of social life networking happen. Next slide.
We're running out of time.
Okay, so anyway, let me just then summarize briefly in the next one, which is homeland security. Again, here, Nabil talked about this DHS infrastructure and the taxonomy and ontology and some applications in modeling, simulation, and analysis. That's a problem area, challenge problem. Now, the challenge for ontologies is development, validation, acceptance, updating, and integration of these ontologies. So that's what that's the homeland security issue. Again, problem and challenge. So the last slide, I guess, next one, is, this is finally the X Prize. There's a lot of stuff around here, and one has to really go through Chris's slides to understand the amount of work that's involved in making this X Prize a reality. And one of the things is the last bullet out there in terms about thoughts about X Prize, what is the domain, how are you going to get the funding, how do you manage this, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know how we are going to do it, but anyway, that's a challenge too. Okay, and I guess that's about it, unless Ernie and Alden have any comments on this thing. I guess the idea here is to kind of produce some grand challenge problems, and then what's the challenge for ontologists with respect to grand challenge problems, and how do you make it happen, something like the XPRIZE, if someone can come out with them, can come up with the money.
Well, one thing that I'd like to make a comment I might have done for a long time, and that is none of these problems are ontology problems by themselves. Every one of them is a major challenge for artificial intelligence. And even if you had a perfect ontology, given the current set of tools, it wouldn't help in the slightest. What you really need are much better reasoning methods, better methods for integrating the language processing, the reasoning, the analysis, the design, the statistical parts and the language parts and everything else. These are huge problems, and I wouldn't even call them ontology problems. They are artificial intelligence challenges.
Yeah, John, okay, let me just chip in on that. Yes, there are major problems. These are all grand challenge problems, and ontology. Ontologies are only a tool that you are going to use in this whole grant. There are lots of other things that you need to do before you can even make this happen. Ontology is not going to solve this problem.
Yeah, and so it's.
But these are all what we wanted as a grand challenges problem, and the role of ontologies. That's all. We are not saying that ontologies are going to solve this problem as such.
Right, and so I would say it doesn't even belong here. There's nothing that current tools would be able to do, even if you had a perfect ontology. These are good challenges for artificial intelligence. They're not challenges for ontology.
Well, there are, but the question here is, well, I guess we can argue on this, but Steve, you are a moderator, you can chip in on time issues. But
running out of time, and actually this was up a little bit on the chat already. I think I am going to have to cut it short a little bit because we got the communique. But I would agree with Ram that this is not intending to imply that application ontology is the way, and if one does that, one has solved those problems. I would think in the more along of these are some opportunity areas in which these kinds of tools and techniques could be applicable. If someone is trying to make a case, these might be some broad areas in which one might want to make that case. Because there are opportunities there. I think your point is taken, John.
So it's essentially, Steve, it's opportunities for ontologies that you summarized it right, okay? It's not so much an ontology solving the problem.
Right, and I realize we could get on, but we are only 14 minutes away from having to finish up, and then I want to have Mike Uschel speak briefly on the communique. We've got just a few minutes to run us through your status report.
That's fine. That's all it will take. So page one is just the title slide. So I'm going to just quickly summarize what it is that I've been doing. Take it off the speakerphone. So essentially, I connected with everyone on the team, almost everyone by actual voice communication, so we had a chat. And we've been back and forth about different possible options. We talked about whether we should actually be making the case itself, but that's really too hard, too many stakeholders, not enough time to do that. Or maybe we could just summarize what we've been doing, which would be useful, but kind of boring. And so we sort of consensus emerged that, well, let's just provide a toolkit, to make it easier to make the case. So that's kind of where we're going now. And that came up earlier in today's discussion. So the consensus did emerge. So the audience is going to be around slide four now. The audience is the ontology community, so it's basically us. It's people who are technically aware of ontologies, and we already get what the case is, more or less, but maybe we don't have, the best way to just, run off a quick little elevator speech and explain it. So it's really to help us. And the objective for the communique is to provide a toolkit which makes it easier for people to make the case for ontology to a variety of stakeholders. Slide five. So now obviously you can't create a detailed, full, complete, set of hints, tips, and guidelines in a 4 or 5 page text, so that's not really going to be enough. But what we're actually going to deliver is that communique, which is, you know, the several pages of text and hopefully figures and diagrams, which is really a concise summary. Some of the key things that we've learned and the key things that everyone who's trying to make the case should be very aware of. But because there's a lot of other information out there, for example, all the case studies, you know, different value models, I think we should be also delivering, you know, the support material, additional information with, you know, sensitive explaining what it is so people can link on it if that's what they're looking for. That might include extra papers, you know, URLs to other relevant sites, different talks, etc. And we may want to upload a variety of these things on the Ontologue site. Page 6. So I'm thinking that it might make sense to have kind of one go-to place for anyone who's interested in the Ontologue Summit or who's interested in making a case, which is a simple, easy-to-look-at web page that just says, here's the objectives, here's the abstract of the communique, and then links to the full text of the communique and some of the other materials. I think that'll be an easy way for people to digest the work that we've done. In terms of process and schedule, I've talked to all the editors but Nicola, but we communicated by email, and I've talked to at least one one person involved in each track, and they're agreeing to provide 2 to 3 pages of text. So I want more text that I can put in so that we can pick and choose the key things that we think are going to make the most sense. We want that done by the end of business, Monday, April 4th. I know that some people are in Europe and some people are here, so I'm just making it simple, local time. But if you live in the right time zone, you have 8 hours longer than the rest of us. And the real point here is to describe things that we can make use of. So to keep the objectives very closely in mind, we don't have a summary of what you did for your track. We want you to pull out those things that you learned from all the materials you gathered and condense that out into hints, tips, guidelines, things that people can use, elaborate, you know, specific things with examples to help people make the case better. I'd also like each track chair who's providing input to, where possible, add some diagrams, figures, and slides so that we can, you know, choose things and make things a little bit easier and more fun for people to read. And the editors so we're going to get this material Monday, and then the editing team will work together to produce a draft by April 8th. Now, a few other comments about what kind of material I want, that we want. We don't want really highly wordsmithed text that you think is going to slot right in, because it's not. It's going to be, some of it will, hopefully. But it's really going to be better. You'll save time if you kind of really pull out highlights. You know, what are specific tips and guidelines, and then elaborate on details and examples. That's going to be more useful than a nice, polished set of text that we may not be able to spot by doing anyway. You know, highlight the key points. What can people look at and say, oh, I'll use that when I make my case to so-and-so. I think it is important to have a summary of what went on in the track, and that can be separate support material. So maybe 2, 3, 4 pages or pointers to documents that does summarize that. That would also be valuable, but it's not all going to fit in a 5-page communique. And another key thing is, for some of the track chairs, not all of them, whenever you talk about a case study or in the values or strategy, try whenever possible with examples to, you know, show very specifically how the ontology, you know, provided value. It's one thing to say better customer attention, but you need to track that back. So I'd like to, in the communique, at least have 1, maybe 2 examples of very detailed things that go right from a value metric all the way back to here's the ontology, here's how it helped, why it helped, something like that. So that would be most useful from those tracks that have that kind of material. There are also, moving on to slide 8, there are some touch points between the tracks. Some of this has also been mentioned. So the value metrics, this has already been done, so I'm glad to see that. I guess I don't need to say a whole lot more here, but the value metrics should be elaborating and making more concrete value propositions and also the ontology purposes that are described in the application framework. The strategy track, I would think, should be using the value propositions and or ontology purposes that are described in the application framework. And I think that, again, has been done to some extent, just to keep it in mind. Case studies did very much use the vocabulary interventions of the framework, and that's good. the grand challenge may, you know, try to mention and extend some of the concepts in the other track where possible, so things tie together better. And that's so, okay. So now moving on to slide 9. So we were hoping to. The idea was to pull together an outline that we had agreed on by this point. And what I did was, with my team, I proposed a few different outlines. We had some discussion back and forth. And the truth of the matter is, I don't know the best way at this time to pull together all the different material. So I'm going to get the material on, you know, by end of business Monday, and then kind of work together with the editing team to see what makes the most sense. And what I wanted to include, just to kind of summarize, you know, hints, tips, and guidelines. That's really the most important thing. Someone needs to read those 5 or 6 pages and get significant value. Oh, I can do this. Not a lot of abstract stuff that they have to then figure out how to turn that into how to make it. It's some really specific tips, hints, guidelines, examples with explanations. And to really emphasize, as has been stated numerous times, that the case varies depending on the audience. And another important thing to bring in, and I can kind of do this, we can, editing team, throw these things in, but I just want to toss it out to the track chairs. Anything you have that bolsters, you know, what's really going on, this is most evident in the case studies, you know, real value, other people are, and one other thing that I've just been tracking is jobs for ontologists. So the fact that, you know, XYZ major company is hiring an ontologist, that's useful information that can also help make a case. So that's it for me.
Okay. Thank you for being succinct there and bringing us in exactly on time. I'm watching the chat board here to see if anyone had any other remarks, but I think you've laid out a really good schedule. It's aggressive, but gets us where we need to be, I think, in sufficient time ahead of the symposium itself. Peter, yes, you got your hand up.
Yes, I have the question typed up on the chat also. So, Michael, in case you don't catch those overboys, look at the chat. So my question is, who can you clearly identify who has promised you tax by end of day Monday, since we're only talking about like 1 or 2 working days?
Yeah, I did talk to, you know, I have a note of that somewhere, and I don't have a piece of paper right in front of me. I can follow up with an email.
All right, please.
Okay.
I kind of want to misquote.
You do have one person per track, please.
Yes, I have one person who's on the hook for doing each one, and I'm going to go back and verify that with emails.
Okay. All right. So I don't see anything else on the chat as far as people raising their hands. I do have a couple of just logistics things regarding the symposium. I had mentioned that the organizing call, we were going to probably have a dinner, sort of a no-host dinner on Monday evening after the first day, and that'll be at the Dogfish Ale House right across the street from NIST, assuming NIST is open. If people would like to join us at that dinner, could you just throw me a little email to that extent? I need to just collect numbers a little bit to make reservations for there. So just shoot me an email saying, yeah, probably go to dinner, and I'll collect those numbers so I can make a reservation. Okay, we've done it in 2 hours. It's very full of information. I'm really happy to see how this is coming together. Each of these talks now is getting more and more dense with material, just looking at the length of the chat board today. So I just really, again, want to thank all of you, all of the co-champions, all the participants, because this is now definitely coming together into something that no one of us could have, you know, put together all of this in this amount of time. So accept our appreciation for that. And next week, let me remind myself, Harry, let's see, what do we have next week on the agenda?
That would be the presentation of the first draft communique.
Are you going to be in a position, Mike Ushold, to represent the team with the first draft on the Thursday call?
Yeah, I will, let's see, so you want, that would essentially mean everything's got to be done by Wednesday night for Thursday morning. You know, if everybody pulls that material together and gets it to me by end of business Monday, I should have a decent approximation to a draft.
Okay, I realize that's a lot of pressure on you. So, If the co-champions can get things to you, you know, earlier than close of business Monday, obviously that'll make your job a little easier as well. So
that is certainly true. And if things don't work out as we hoped for, then the fallback option is still not so bad, which is we'll give a status report. We'll have looked at things very close and carefully. John Bateman offered to kind of work with me at least in a first, you know, serious look. And I'll talk to the editors to see what role they're going to do. So worst case, if things don't work well, I'll have looked at it, we'll have, you know, banged our heads quite hard, we'll have some ideas, and we'll have outline and some text, even if it might not be quite ready. And we'll have questions before, and get people's feedback on maybe we're stuck and we wondered whether to go this way or that. So,
okay.
Something will be possible by next Thursday.
All right, very good. And I think we'll wrap it up. Peter had a good suggestion for me on the dinner. I will maybe send out an email with a nice specific email address to just respond to for the dinner. So maybe I'll do that. It'll make it even easier for the dinner rest. All right. Well, in that case, I'm going to close it up so that everyone can rush off and start preparing the material so that we'll be in good shape. And thank you all for attending. We'll see you next week, and I think we're going to land this plane, actually, in time. So thanks again, and that concludes today's session.